Welcome to After Hours, conversations for music educators, presented by Amro Music. This is where we share ideas and work towards solutions to better serve your students. This week, Nick Averwater continues his conversation with Dr. Emily Williams-Birch, professor of music at Savannah College of Art and Design in Savannah, Georgia. Dr. Birch was also named to the 2023 Yamaha 40 Under 40 list of music educators. And in this episode, we'll learn about the work she's done with the American Choral Directors Association to provide advocacy resources to fellow educators. Our conversation was recorded in late November of 2023. We've broken it up into two episodes, and this is part two.
So, Emmy, I want to talk a little bit about this American Choral Directors Association, of which you are you have a significant role in that. It sounds
not
like
not that big. I'm not on the exec council. I'm a chair of a committee. That's
okay. But the committee is advocacy and collaboration. I want to talk a little bit about the advocacy component. What are some of the things that you are responsible for, or the committee is responsible for, from an advocacy standpoint? Let's start there.
So, great question. And there's a bunch of standing committees that ACDA has put together to help. Like, ACDA is one of those professional organizations that does conferences regionally on even years and nationally on odd years. And so what the executive council determined back in like 2015, 16, 17 was that we needed to serve the membership in between all of those conferences. And so to help do so, they created a bunch of standing committees for equity and diversity and inclusion, for education, for composition, and for advocacy and collaboration. There's a couple others too that I'm forgetting. But advocacy and collaboration, our job is to create resources and to make connections. So if you go to acda.org/advocacy, or if you go to advocacy and collaboration on Facebook or Instagram, you'll find a series of resources, whether they are links or suggested books or podcast recordings or blog posts. We try to create resources so that people who find themselves in the need to advocate or interested in collaborating, they have what they need to get started. So it's a really fun organization. It's very organic. It's kind of, when we first started in 2017, a grassroots effort to help teachers advocate and collaborate. So we think of advocacy in two parts. There's big A advocacy and little A advocacy, like capital A, lowercase a. Big A advocacy is what you see happening in DC. It's what you see happening at your school boards. It is advocating at large for our profession and for what we do. There are some fantastic books on this. My favorite is by Lynn Brinkmeyer. Her book on advocacy is absolutely fantastic. In fact, in my book, The Business of Choir, we have a whole resource page, and you can find that resource page at thebusinessofchoir.com website. And so we love suggesting that people read that book because it offers so many tangible things you can do to help support the big A and the little A advocacy. So little A advocacy is the stuff you do day to day in your space, in your community. It's the posting a picture of something cool that you've done together. Maybe you had Crazy Hat Day. Maybe you had a retreat. Maybe you had a cookout. Like, whatever it is that you did, maybe you just played this section perfectly. So you recorded it and posted the snippet on your organization's website. It's what you're doing to show that you are actually fulfilling those important things that you are saying that you're doing. But the key with both big A and little A advocacy is it's intentional. So you post it, but make sure you talk about the team building that happened, the leadership skills, the soft skills, the musical skills. You have to actually point at it and be direct. One of my favorite examples happened during the pandemic, and it was actually in a conversation with Lynn Brinkmeyer, who wrote the book on advocacy. She was directing her ensemble, and they were doing everything virtually, and they did some type of funny game where they had to go on a scavenger hunt and came back, and they all had on these different hats, and one kid had on the lampshade, and it was a hoot of a picture. So she took a screenshot, She sent it off to her dean, her provost, and one other person, I think director of the school of music or something, and said, it might not be ideal, but we are still having fun. We're still making connections and we're still making music. That's advocacy.
Love it. Well, and I have never heard the big A, little A, but I have had this feeling so much on this show and just in communicating with others that, because so many people, I think, sometimes abdicate advocacy to the big A only. Well, you know, I'm not going to go to the, I'm not going to go to the state capitol and I'm not going to go to Washington, D.C., which first let me talk about that. So I've had the awesome privilege of going to Washington, D.C. 3 or 4 times now with NAMM. You should absolutely go if you ever get the opportunity to big A advocate. They're just people and they're incredible people and you should absolutely go and experience that. But I think so often we see that and it's like, well, I'm going to abdicate the advocacy to that, the big A advocacy. But there's this little A advocacy and that is everyone's responsibility. Like mm-hmm. as Mary Lewerson says at NAMM, if not us, then who's going to advocate? You know, who's going to do the lowercase A advocacy? And so
and
I love the clarity.
You back to value. Like you have to know what your value is and what you're contributing. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I get so excited about it.
No, dude.
Because it is. It's all of our responsibility to talk about what we do. I mean, yeah, I teach music theory classes and I teach little ensembles and I teach people how to sing better. What does that do for the world? Well, these students are learning how to problem solve. They're learning how to work together. They're learning how to take a concept and apply it to something that matters to them. That's life. But you have to tell people that that's what's happening. They can't read your mind and they can't necessarily translate your lesson plans or your syllabi or your sequencing into those pieces. So don't be afraid to go up to your assistant principal and say, hey, I have this lesson. We're not just focusing on mastering this complex rhythm and playing as a community. We're also building leadership skills in how we're doing this, this, and this. I'd love for you to come watch the power of music in impacting lives positively beyond the music. But also, you'll enjoy the music while you're there.
Yeah, I love that. And a couple other things that stand out. The example you gave during the pandemic with the lampshade. Absolutely love it. And what's really interesting about that is there's an educator who knew what their value was. They had predetermined that going into the pandemic, what their value was. They knew the importance of advocacy. So the only thing that really changed was the how. Now, it was a big how, but their why didn't really change and their what really didn't change. What changed was their how they did it. And the pandemic forced that change, but they didn't miss the opportunity to advocate. And that I love that example so much because I think we can continue to relate that to any diversity or adversity that we face in the mm-hmm. in the future that, hey, our what and why doesn't change, just our how does.
Mm-hmm. And it's so true. I mean, academia is hilarious and I love my job so much. You never know what you're going to get and you can choose. This is another visual from my really great mentor. You can choose to let your bubble that you live in become clouded or to darken. That's a choice. You choose your weather every day. Yes, there are some things out of your control, and sometimes you do need to seek emotional support. And yes, we highly recommend therapy, but you choose your bubble. And so anytime I would start to fall into some of those darker bubble moments, because sometimes public school teaching especially is real tough. There's politics and things you have no control over. But you can only control what you can control, and you can choose what weather you show up in. So I always talk about my bubble is pink and sparkly, and I'm just going to wipe that little dirt off right there and choose my own sunshine. And sometimes I get labeled as toxic positivity. I'm just a very positive person. I'm super optimistic, and I'm going to assume that you are doing the best you can and that you are genuine in what you're doing until you prove otherwise. And I tell that to all of my students. I'm assuming that you're doing all of your work and that you are working at the highest possible level you can work at until you prove otherwise. And then I'm going to give you a kick in the pants and help you get to where you need to be. But it's not going to impact my pink sparkly bubble or my chosen weather. And I think as you're talking about advocacy, often teachers fall into the dark storm cloud. You need to have your dark storm cloud moments, but don't live in the storm. Figure out a path to get your umbrella and get through to the other side. And that umbrella can really be choosing those moments that can help you advocate through it.
Yeah. Well, what I found really interesting too is every example that you gave of advocacy was positive and proactive. You didn't give a single example of negative or reactive. And so often too, I think we hear the word advocacy and it's like they're talking about cutting the budget. We've got to advocate in a negative manner. Every example you gave was proactive and positive. Why was that?
Well, I choose that for myself. That is a personality and a choice. So part of it I know is genetic. My family is a very positive family. But I also think because I have seen that living in the storm cloud does nothing for me. It doesn't get me anywhere. My grandma always says, you're going to get so much more with honey than with vinegar. And so I know that if I can be sweeter and prove the positive side, that it will have a more powerful impact. Now, one of the best advocacy episodes I ever recorded was with a human who specializes in coming into districts and helping make that advocacy shift. He usually gets called when programs are about to be cut. And he said so strongly, advocacy for programs starts with communication with the people that are supporting them. For a lot of us, that's the parents. The parents are choosing what they're spending time on, what they're spending resources on. And sometimes those experiences can get tainted negatively because parents are angry. But I encourage you to remember that everybody just wants to be heard. And Brené Brown says it all the time. They're doing the best they think they can do. Let them be heard. Set your boundaries and make sure that you are showing up in your chosen weather with your chosen bubble. And your bubble might get pushed on, and that's okay. But if everybody knows that you're still going to show up positively, you've proven that. Or if you don't and you have a moment of relapse, don't be afraid to say, I'm sorry. There's always a day every quarter where you're just tired. We're on the quarter system. And usually when I have one of those tired days, I'll skip a sequence or I'll be like, okay, that was good enough. And then I have to come back to the next class and be like, y'all, I was tired. I let go of my pink sparkly bubble. I am so sorry. It's back in place today. Because you're proving that you're still showing up in that way. So they will continue. Like my students all wrote about that. We knew you were going to be positive. So we chose to show up positive, even though it was an 8 a.m. class. I love 8 a.m. classes. But the truth is there for parents, for programs. If you choose the positive pieces to advocate, it will help your storm cloud pass.
Yeah, I think that's so wise because to your point, the storm cloud example, if you positively advocate, you may get to the storm cloud before it ever hits you, right? The mm-hmm. conversations, you can steer that storm cloud right around your program mm-hmm. with positive advocacy. So let's identify just some constituent groups here in a school music program, band, choir, orchestra, mm-hmm. that needs to receive some degree. We won't talk about the types of positive advocacy, but there's a handful of constituent groups that we better identify to say, you better advocate in some degree or another to these handful of groups. Mm-hmm. What are they for you?
That's a great question. And I like to start visually. So first, right in front of you are your students. They need to know what they're getting out of the program. And that's something that you as an educator will see shift over periods of time. If you think about the students in front of you now versus the students that were in front of you in the early 2000s versus the students in between, they had different needs. For example, some of the students that I taught in the beginning of my career now are married with children, but they were 100% invested if they knew why they were doing something. Then there was this next round of students that came through, and they were invested if you told them what they would get out of it. It's figuring out what motivates the students in front of you. And so I think when you're thinking who needs to know advocacy, start with the students in front of you and make sure that you are continually communicating whatever is motivating them to get there. Knowing that students in your classroom are going to have different motivations, and you need to address all of those. It's kind of like in a podcast when the host kind of does a little review for you at the beginning or the end. Someone needs to hear that. Your students also need to hear why they're doing this every day, because there's only so many concerts. That can't be the only thing that motivates them. So start with the students in front of you. Branch out. Their caregivers are really important. They need to know what's happening in that classroom. They see one or two concerts. They need to also see the process along the way. How are you sharing or communicating that? Do you have an open rehearsal? Do you have a midway parents night or caregiver night? I'm trying to change my lingo because caregiver is more general. What are you doing to invite them into the circle and make sure they know what their child, their student, their person is getting from you? So your students, the caregivers. Then you go one step beyond that from the parents to the community. And I think of this as a tree branch going one direction, students, caregivers, community. And how are you advocating to your community the great things going on in your program? They're going to show up for the football game. They're going to know the marching band exists. But do they know about your concert band? Do they know about your jazz band? Do they know about your fill in the blank? You have to make sure they know about it so that they can support it. So that's one branch of the tree. The other branch of the tree, the people in your program with you. How are you advocating what you are accomplishing to them, whether it's your assistant directors, your other music directors, your other area directors, your other, quote, specials directors? How does the choir guy know what the band guy's doing? How do, you know, those type of things are important. And I say that with a generalization of the word guy. It's just a general human being. Same is true beyond that. How do the other teachers in your building know what you're doing so they respect their time? I think one of the best things I ever did when I was in my K-8 school was at parent teacher night, we did this whole little why music is important to me moment. And it was in front of all the other teachers. Wouldn't you know, teachers stopped pulling their students out of music time because that's a choice. But the other teachers in the building don't know why it's so important that they're there unless you communicate that and advocate for that. So you start with the people in your area, the other teachers in your area, the teachers in the building, the administration, and their support staff. It is just as important that your front office secretary or your principal secretary knows what you're doing and why as it is for your principal or assistant principal to know. And then beyond that, do you have a fine arts coordinator? Do you have an area coordinator? Who is the person at the school board or at your main, we call it the, it's called 208 Bull. Who is your person down there that is watching your building and how are you communicating with them? Invite them to something. Let them come watch the process. Create a little snippet video for them. We all learned that skill during the pandemic. Show them the before and after of a phrase or of a song. Have a student introduce the music and say at the concert, here's why we learned it, here's what we learned along the way, and here's why I love it. I do that at every honor choir because it doesn't matter why I picked that music. That community needs to hear from those singers why we're singing that song. And then go to the top. Who are your superintendents? Who are your board people? If you still need to advocate, I strongly encourage you exploring your city government. We have a county and a city government here, and sometimes it's really important to also invite them because there are city grants and community grants that they might know can support your programs, but if they don't know you exist, they can't encourage you to apply for them. So kind of think of the advocacy people who are invested on two branches, the students and everything that branches from them, you and your fellow teachers and everything that branches from them.
That is one of the best examples of advocacy that I think I've ever heard. And I love that you gave different examples for each group, how it takes a different form and the impact. I mean, you talked about the other teachers who are pulling students out of your class. And so you advocated. I mean, you didn't go to them. I mean, you could have gone to them and said, you have to stop doing this. It's messing up my program. I'm trying to put a concert on. And you probably... You may have been effective, but you would have upset somebody in the process. But instead, you proactively advocated in a positive way and said, let me share from my students' perspective why music is important to them. And all of a sudden, the pullouts stopped. I mean, it's so good. It's so good. Absolutely love that.
It's so hard too, though. Well, thank you. I think we have to acknowledge that choosing the positive path is the path of more resistance usually. And it's also a practiced habit to go that direction. So give yourself grace if you do approach that teacher and say, hey, stop pulling people. Sorry, can you please stop pulling people? Here's so-and-so. They can explain why better than I can.
Yeah. Well, and even all the way up, you mentioned your city council and your school board. And, you know, we have these concerts and I think they're great, but so often than not, we forget to mail invitations. And how easy is it to just simply mail an invitation to your city council members or to your school board members, or let them read the introduction or narrate a song during the Christmas concert, or
give them a job on the stage. Yes. You know who's doing great at that? Fairfax County, Virginia. Holy smokes. They had something like 700 sixth graders in this all county thing. And they had everyone who was anyone reading, narrating, talking. It was a full house. I've never seen so many admins in one, and so many principals from the schools were there. It was so cool. They had reserved seats. We talk about that in the book. Give them reserved seats and a job to do at the concert. They'll show up that way.
Lesson learned at the lemonade stand. Everybody gets a job. Absolutely. Everybody. Love it. Absolutely love it. Well, Emmy, I still have so many topics I want to cover with you, but out of respect to your time,
you are so
there's
kind.
There's one more that kind of comes to mind. And you have such a rich experience in choir and band, and also from a music educator perspective, teaching music educators. You know, in our area, we have a lot of rural schools. It's a lot of farming communities through the Mississippi Delta. And so often, young educators find themselves the only educator in the building, fresh out of college, they're just getting started, and they have to do band and choir. You know, I'm so excited. I graduated from this big marching band and went to this college, and I'm going to go be a band. You know the story, right? We see it all too often. Took my first job, and at 6 through 12, I'm the only music educator in the building, and I have this thing called choir. What advice would you give an educator that's found themselves in that situation?
Play into your strengths. A lot of times, again, it goes back to those values. What are your strengths? So you might not love choir music like I love choir music, but you might really love teaching rhythm or layering parts, and you might have some pieces that you're excited about teaching or something you want to try to create or arrange together. Play into your strengths and don't try to live up to anyone else's expectations. Do your homework, show up prepared, and learn how to be healthy with the voice, even if that requires you listening to a lot of podcasts or calling in people to help you or getting someone to give you some advice. Don't be afraid to ask for help. But then also play into your strengths and choose stuff that you love. As you choose stuff that you love, just like we do for our students, you will eventually learn other things you can add into that. I always like to say, when I started my first job at the middle school choir program, we picked 5 songs as a group of singers, 4 that they got to pick and 1 that I got to pick. And then the next semester, it was 3 and 2 because they trusted that I could pick something that would be still amazing for them, even though it wasn't something they, quote, thought they would like to do. If you are thrust into this world of choir, just pick stuff you love so you can focus on the sequencing and the teaching. Teach them from your strengths. Don't be afraid to ask for help and go from there.
I love that advice. In researching your book, out of curiosity, did you find many differences between the keys to success for band, orchestra, and choir?
No, not at all, actually. It's a lot of the same stuff, just with different vocabulary. And we talk about that in the introduction, that we use the word choir, but insert whatever here. Or we use the word singer, but insert whatever. It's all, you're running an organization. You are creating a product. You are selling something. We are all entrepreneurs. We are all business owners, but we're not taught those classes in college. So we have to learn on the fly. And yes, a lot of us have innate leadership skills, but not all of us. And even those of us that are super extroverted and not afraid to ask for help need to pause and reflect and work on our leadership style or develop our business plan. And that's okay. That's what makes this job so much fun and so different every day. We are entrepreneurs making a product that we are absolutely obsessed with because we chose music as our path for life.
Yeah, love it. Well, Emmy, as we're approaching the end of our conversation here, first, I just want to say thank you. And I would love to just hear, do you have any closing thoughts or final advice that you might want to share with our listeners before we sign off today?
Oh, you're so sweet for having me. This has been fun to talk. No matter what you're doing, friends that are listening, you're doing the right thing. You just listened to a very long podcast that's hopefully going to be broken up into many pieces. But you're doing the right thing. You're investing in you. And some days are going to be easier than others. Some days are going to be hard. But just know that you're the only you there is on this whole planet. So don't rob the world or the students in front of you the opportunity of experiencing you exactly as you are right now. Because you are the only you there is, and we're so glad that you're doing what you're doing.
Amen. That's great. Well, and Emmy, for any of our listeners that may want to perhaps get in contact with you, you mentioned Honor Choir, speaking engagement, your book, anything else, just questions that may come up. Is there a way that they can do that?
Yeah, super easy. So Emily Birch, EmilyBurch.org. I had to be different because I just do too many things to be a .com. So EmilyBurch.org/contact will go directly to me. You can also check out the Music Ed Matters podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts, or you can find those on YouTube. Just search Dr. Emily Williams Birch, and I have a Music Ed Matters podcast playlist. I also host this fun little podcast called the Illuminate Podcast, which has absolutely nothing to do with music, just illuminating cool stories across the country. And I work on that with a couple other women out in the world that like to tell stories. But really, just find me on Instagram, Dr. Emmy B, whatever. I'm here for you. It's a small world. Whether you feel like you're in an island because you legit are in a small rural town and the only music educator in your building, or you're swimming in a massively large pond of musicians, we're all here for the same reasons. We all love music. So don't be afraid to reach out and ask questions. It's the best part of the job.
Well, thank you for your time today. And I just appreciate everything you're doing to advance music in our communities.
Same to you, my friend. Same to you.
That's Dr. Emily Williams Birch, professor of music at Savannah College of Art and Design, talking with Nick Averwater on After Hours, Conversations for Music Educators, which is presented by Amro Music. This podcast is produced by Nick Averwater and Joel Hurd in Memphis, Tennessee, and you can hear many more conversations at amromusic.com/afterhours.
Hey, if you enjoyed today's episode, here are two easy and fast ways you can support the After Hours show. First, your 5-star review means a lot as it helps to boost us in the podcast rankings so that other music educators just like you can find us. Second, if you thought of someone that would enjoy this week's content and episode, hey, please share it with them so that they too can be a part of the After Hours community. Thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.